Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
DNVR Draft Pod. We are here, not in the Toyota Lounge, but here nonetheless. Little Studio B action with all the boys crammed in to the four seater here. You love to see it. And Table and Bo Nix talk for a week.
Yeah.
That's fun.
I'm personally very excited.
We've talked a lot about Bo Nix. I'm glad we got into our margins convo at the end of last podcast.
Margins.
I think that's merely where we disagree, is where those margins can be made up.
Yes.
And that's A-OK. As I mentioned, we're here to talk about all the other prospects in the Broncos draft. I think the top four post-Bo Nix are who we're going to dedicate the most attention to, and then we'll get into some exciting UDFAs and guys like that. As always, I am your host, Andre Simone, joined by Henry Chisholm, Jake Schwanitz, and Justin Michael. Yaya on the ones and twos in the back. How are we doing today, Justin?
We're good, man. I mean, This is what it's all about. Diving into the nerdy shit, living the playoff drama night in and night out. We were just picking Eric Lacroix's brain before the show. It's been a good day. Yeah. I'm excited.
Whole bunch of stories we can't share.
You guys can only imagine out there.
Yeah. I think enough time's passed to where he could share them, but well, that's a conversation for another time. Yeah. Also a ball knower and someone who's been in a draft room or two, that Eric LeBlanc.
Very true.
Yeah.
I wonder who his best draft pick was. Like Duchesne would be in there. I think he drafted Ryan O'Reilly as well.
Was that right?
Yeah.
We'll have to ask
No,
him.
He drafted Landy too.
We'll have to talk to him.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I don't think he drafted Nate. I think that was right after.
I want to start on the offensive side of the ball.
Oh, football offensive, yeah.
The Broncos drafted after Bo Nix, Troy Franklin, Audric Estime, two guys we are very excited about. That Troy Franklin pick makes all of the discussion with the other picks much easier.
Uh-huh.
Because if you talk about, well, Jonah Ellis, good, this and that, but probably wouldn't have drafted him. There are guys I would have picked ahead. Troy Franklin's the guy we would have picked ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Kind of unanimously, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we were all on that same page.
Troy Franklin, also a guy we talked about early on in the season, in that weird spot where the Broncos are winning games and all of a sudden it doesn't feel like they'll have a top 10 pick anymore. So the dream of drafting a Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, and Malik Nabers is gone. Troy Franklin's ascending at Oregon, having an amazing season. And we were talking about him as wide receiver 4 at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So, Jake, you covered the Pac-12.
Yep.
What made Troy Franklin such an intriguing pick for the Broncos and an intriguing wide receiver in this draft class overall?
He was Oregon's guy last year. He was Bo's guy last year.
Yeah.
Basically, nearly every big play that Oregon had, whether it was late, under pressure, or just to get the game started, get the scoring started, it was always Troy Franklin. He's someone, he reminded me of like a Jalin Hyatt body type, maybe not as tall, but long,
yes.
Skinny, but man, he could run. Yeah.
Yep.
So...
that's a great comp, by the way.
And that's just body type. I mean, I think he's a better wide receiver than Jalin Hyatt, actually. I mean, I wasn't too high on him last year at all.
No.
So, but he's a guy who's shown the ability to, you know, make some pretty awesome catches. He's got the body control. He's got the speed, obviously. He showed the clutch ability, hands. Can Yak-ability. Leave a little more to be desired at times, but a fairly complete wide receiver.
Yeah.
You worry a little bit just with how skinny he is about getting pressed at the line of scrimmage. I mean, there were times I thought were some bigger, stronger DBs were kind of able to jam him up a little bit. But I mean, with the chemistry he has, the giving him just basically giving your young quarterback a security blanket and a guy who you can throw the ball up. I mean, he can jump through the roof. Just let him go up and get it. He can burn you over the top. Some of the quick screens and stuff underneath. I mean, they did a lot of that at Oregon. It just feels like, especially for wanting to hit the ground running with a young quarterback, bringing in his sidekick was just such a smart move. And I mean, the value to get him where you did, like you're saying, I think there were a lot of people who wouldn't have been surprised, including me, if he would have went in the second round. And to get him on day three, just a steal.
Yeah, I mean,
early second, end of the first wouldn't have surprised me.
No, I mean, it was the Chiefs at 31 that everybody was really tying him to just because he's a speed guy. But yeah, I mean, number three receiver in his recruiting class. So like, great prospect coming out. Doesn't do much his freshman year. I mean, it is what it is. Leads the team in receiving his sophomore year. Leads him again his junior year.
Second, with a big leap.
Yes. Yeah. Second in touchdowns in college football among receivers over the past 2 years behind Marvin Harrison Jr. Mm-hmm. Like top five, top six in receiving yards last year. So he's a guy who came out as a super hyped up prospect who lived up to all the hype, did it in 3 years, went to the draft. Like that's just the kind of prospect that you love. Like it's just so easy to like what he's done.
Felt to me like one of the biggest risers this draft cycle too. I mean, he really had a stretch where Bo and Oregon's just dominating, you know, like that USC game where it's like, man, this guy's, I mean, there's no. So then what would the reasons be that a guy like this drops?
I think I mentioned, I don't think he has the best hands in the class.
Yep. There were some inconsistencies.
The number 10% drops from PFF, that was the high, like, so 16 receivers drafted in front of him all had a lower drop rate.
Yeah, so there you go. I think that's a point in case right there.
Yeah.
I think he can get kind of pigeonholed into just the deep threat type of or archetype. I think he can be more than that, but that's what he really did at Oregon and what he did really well, too. So I think a bit of the hands, a bit of the archetype is what pigeonholed him and had him drop in the draft.
Yeah, and I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. Obviously 176 pounds stands out again. Sure 16 does. Receivers, sure does. 16 receivers drafted in front of him. Only
that and
Worthy's
his height,
lighter.
Almost 6'2". So there's which, the two contrasting metrics. Weight scares you. Height really intrigues you.
It does because I kind of thought he was more of like the 6'3" type coming into it. He kind of, but he comes in at 6'1 7/8", which is a little bit disappointing, but almost makes the body make more sense because he is so light. The other one to me, and this might be crazy, because 4.41 speed is obviously fast. It's very, very fast.
It's blazing.
It's blazing fast. But the league is also blazing fast now. Again, 16 receivers drafted in front of him. His 40 time was only better than 8 of them. So he really is dead center middle of the pack because there are just so many fast receivers that speed isn't a separator as much as it's like, he's a fast guy.
Mm-hmm. On tape, I think there is more than the 4.41, but that I think that just, is where the one
like
of the differences
speed
came.
Guy,
he does.
Whereas, he didn't 4.41. It's not like he had a bad showing in the 40, but I'm not worried about it. I guess that's what I'm saying in terms of separation and speed. If anything, it's just at that size with the strength, you know, when DB's getting your hands on you, you're going to be able to have the same type of success over the top.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I mean, he had one game this season with less than 75 receiving yards. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One. And it was the Pac-12 title game.
8 of the 12, he had at least 100.
Yeah, no, he was on an absolute heater. I totally, coming into the draft, had him ranked ahead of Xavier Worthy.
Yeah.
Who gets, you know, drafted. The Chiefs trade up for him.
Let me ask you guys this. The Chiefs land Xavier Worthy, their speedster. Again, Franklin's a guy who was kind of projected in that mix. Does that scare you more if a guy like Franklin is in Kansas City than Worthy?
Yeah, he's a better wide receiver.
He is.
Better football player.
Yeah. I'll be very interested to see how they use Xavier Worthy. I think Franklin would have been a better way to round out your receiving core and kind of give you something different from Hollywood Brown. Xavier Worthy feels very Hollywood Brown-esque.
I wonder if he's just going to be a gadget guy.
When we get into the AFC West, I can't wait to talk a little more about Xavier Worthy. Xavier Worthy's last year tape wasn't that exciting. Xavier Worthy freshman tape is nutty. And that's where maybe there's a little more untappedness. I'm going to get into just a little more Troy Franklin on the other side here. And then obviously Audric Estime and the rest of the Broncos class. But just like the Broncos draft class, Breckenridge Brewery always takes good care of you. So many options for you. And maybe their Troy Franklin is their new West Coast style IPA. Ridge Runner, the double dry hop brew inspired by the untamed beauty of Colorado trails. Hop back infused with whole cone hops, a double dose of Citra lupulin powder. Notes of a bright citrus and pine. I actually haven't tried that way yet. I gotta get in on this. This sounds
delicious. I haven't tried this either.
Now's the time, guys. They got new seltzer flavors, Ridge Runners out. Man. I mean, summer's when it gets innovative over at Breck.
Good company was treating me right at the brewery. And man, the farmhouse just has such delicious food. Check out the farmhouse. Check out the beer locator, breckbrew.com, to find a brew near you. Breck Brew, always here taking care of you on the draft pod.
On your mark, get set. Eat. Make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable hand-battered chicken fingers. They're always cooked to order and made just for you. Race in for delicious chicken finger meals served up fast. Order up tender chicken fingers, crispy crinkle-cut fries, buttery Texas toast, and don't forget about that creamy coleslaw. And of course, the secret Cane sauce. It's all about that sauce. You can order online, either via the website or just the mobile app, which is super convenient. And for cooked order, hand-battered chicken fingers, race into Raising Cane's. Turbocharge your chicken fingers. Get them even faster by ordering online at RaisingCane's.com or again through that mobile app, Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers. One love, baby.
Nicely done. Yeah, Troy Franklin, that speed is going to be part of the conversation. The weight is really part of the conversation. Where I think it's probably limiting him most is competing against press coverage right now. He's going to have to work on that. He's going to have to use that speed to his advantage. Even if they're jamming you up, just using that burst, getting out freely. The way he competes at the end of the catch has me really intriguing. Tracking balls, using that speed on contested catches, stuff like that. The drops concern me less with him because I do see the ability to make tougher catches, to make contested catches, to catch and run and use your hands naturally.
You know who it reminds me of a little bit, just who's in that? Terms of the unpredictableness and like the weirdness with some of his drops is, remember like back in the day how much people used to get frustrated with Demaryius Thomas because he'd drop, you know, the little comeback route right in his hands, and you'd just be like, what the hell? And then you'd see him go up, make a one-handed catch over somebody in the end zone. And I feel like Franklin has some of that, whereas I wonder if it's just like the occasional mental lapse. And like if he just locks in, matures a little bit, you have a little bit less issues there.
I also, that is a major
very
positive.
Young. Very
and on
young.
Top of that, didn't play his senior year of high school because of COVID. So like even more football young potentially. Yeah. The reason the drops scare me a little bit more is because, again, 16 receivers drafted in front of him, only one has smaller hands, and that's Ladd McConkey. So that feels like it could be more of a real issue and not just like, well, fluky bad
season.
What
are his hands?
8¾ inches.
Yeah, so almost 9-inch hands.
Yeah, but again,
it's not like, super small.
There are two other receivers that didn't hit the 9-inch mark. Again, that was
drafted before him. Ladd McConkey.
And then also with 8¾ inches is Xavier Worthy. Like those are small hands means drops. I think, right?
More drops than big hands is exactly what it means.
And so I don't love it. I really don't love the drop aspect.
Drops are concerning. Yeah. I think the getting off press, I think the playing at full speed, I think the limited route tree was more of what hurt him. Honestly, the route tree comes in with is very Marvin Mims-esque.
Exactly.
So you're running screens, you're running go yep. balls, you're running maybe a deep post, a few of those deep routes, and then you're running slants and stuff.
Is that a little less worrisome, though, given that you might be a little simplified within your offense anyways, just because you have a rookie quarterback?
Well, and that's just what Bo does well anyway, too. Like taking shots, managing, you know, the screen game, the running game underneath, trying to do what you can in the short to intermediate, but that's how he made his money this last year.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're hoping Marvin now takes that jump to now expand upon that and be your Jerry Jeudy mm-hmm. so that Troy Franklin can be your Marvin Mims. 100%. And then next year he can take the step.
It's just a natural next part of the progression because you're mm-hmm. not going to be able to survive on just those routes in the NFL. In college, you can.
We saw it with Marvin.
And Troy Franklin.
And Troy Franklin.
And yeah. I could name a bazillion air raid quarterback. Corey Coleman just needed yep. those routes, you know. Get to the NFL, you need a little bit more. For me, was the one other top 50 prospect in this Broncos class. So to get him at 102, incredible value. Really mm-hmm. incredible value. And then there's the boat connection, which really adds a lot.
I maybe you don't know this off the spot, but just kind of off the top of your head, where would that fall in the last couple of years in terms of best value picks the Broncos would have made?
That would be...
It's got to be pretty high.
Yeah, up there with the best of them. I'm trying to think of the last few classes. It's certainly without a first or second rounder the last couple of years. That's been hard to really bring home
Benito massive and Mims value. Were good value mm-hmm. picks, I thought.
No, they were. Benito, mm-hmm. Mims, for sure. Drew Sanders, mm-hmm. I thought, got drafted like a round
Sanders was higher. Who came to mind for me.
But we're not talking about... You were a guy in the 40s for me, and you got drafted in the high 100. It wasn't a 50 spot difference. It was closer to a 30 spot difference.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes to show you, I mean, really, yeah. really incredible value.
Definitely.
Jose in the Toyota chat asking, who plays the slot? Will Troy Franklin's talent be wasted or misplaced as a slot wide receiver?
That's the big question. I mean, I think you could convince yourself that you want Marvin in there for the speed threat.
Yeah.
And you get him close, you can run all your little jet sweeps, that sort of stuff.
Might want Sutton or Patrick for the size.
Exactly. And Josh Reynolds, I mean, that's kind of what he does as well.
That's exactly
so
right.
So I think there's a real case for all of them.
So honestly, Jose, I think he's more of an outside speed threat than a slot guy.
Yep.
Well, and again, going back to his route tree, putting him inside is just going to limit him because what are you going to do?
Right. Yep. No press, though. But yeah.
Well, and you could do some crossers and stuff. And like there are some ways you could get him in motion and get him the ball. Mm-hmm. In space, and mm-hmm. maybe you do a little bit of that, but I don't think it's a situation where, like, you just put Cortland on the outside and Tim on the outside, and he's just kind of there in the middle.
I'll be really excited to see a few more double moves. I'll be excited to see how he can be incorporated in the screen game and how you can create some free releases for him. That's going to be the key, you know? Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to be like the Miami offense, a guy like Troy Franklin. Allows you, and Marvin Mims, frankly, allows you to start tapping into that kind of stuff. Audric Estime?
Let's do it.
Audric Estime. Dog. Super young. Can't get a beer at the DMVR bar right now.
I love that.
Not for himself.
He can't order at the bar and show an ID. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
You,
for legal.
I'm not incriminating anybody but me.
To talk about bringing him up to the office, sneaking him a beer. Forget that. All I'm saying is he's younger than 21.
I'm the one who would go to
jail.
We
don't need to dwell on that point more than he is younger than 21 is all I'm saying.
I'm a good look.
Audric, we started talking about him by week 3. He started to emerge as one of the top running backs in this class with a 90-yard performance against the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Yep.
One of the bigger backs in this class.
Mm-hmm.
I open it up to you. What stood out and got you most excited about this prospect?
I mean, this guy's just a freight train. He breaks tackles. I think even for his size, what's he listed at? 6'1", 215. I think he looks bigger on film, honestly.
He looks
way
bigger, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have like that lumbering like laziness that you see from some big backs. Like I think he moves really, really well for his size.
The get-off is really impressive. What's going to be... Everyone's going to do the combine workout analysis and the slow 40, What you also need to look at is the explosiveness from those otherworldly jumps.
Yep. And I go back to 2022, honestly. He impressed me the season before this one as one of the best young backs in the country. He had big performances against Syracuse, North Carolina. Nearly hit 1,000 yards that year, too. He's just someone that's been on my radar for a minute.
Yeah. I mean, so the 40 is obviously the scary part. He improved it a little at his pro day, got up to a 4.61. But like you said, it's the explosiveness that you like. So he had that 1.58
10 yard split, which is very high.
So for perspective, Blake Corum, 4.53 40, 1.59 10 yard split. Marshawn Lloyd, 1.6. Bucky Irving, 1.61. So he's right in the thick of where all of these guys come from. And you point out the jumps. We said it on the draft show, but he's under 6 feet tall and he could dunk when he was 12. Like, that's an explosive athlete. Yep. So while the long speed might not be there, he has everything else that you could look for in a running back. Like, is it literally everything except for the long speed?
Catching ability might be one of my biggest questions, but I'm very intrigued by what he brings to the table in that aspect, too.
Well, I think he showed a little bit more of it this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, it wasn't the... They just weren't doing a ton of it in that Notre Dame offense. Yep. But, I mean, that was one thing I was... kept waiting for was, hey, like, you gonna throw him a swing pass at any point? Like, I kind of want to see him in the open space a little bit. But the thing that jumped out the most to me about him, I mean, just looking at some of the numbers, I like a back that gets stronger as the season goes on. And you look at how he closed the season. I mean, he had 10 touchdowns over the final 5 weeks, 85 plus yards in all five of those games, like well over 100 yards in three of them. For a Broncos team that's kind of struggled to keep backs on the field these last couple of years, he's really durable. I like just feeling like you could put him in, give him 15 carries, and he's going to hold up for 17 weeks.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I love what Strez says here. He says, the thing I love about Estime is how patient he is behind the line of scrimmage, and then when he finds a lane, he explodes.
That's 100%. Reads his box really well.
He reads them well. The vision for a young back, a young power back, is really good. He really thrives in, you know, one cut and get downhill and go.
Yep.
And then he was one of the top backs in this class for yards after first contact.
Oh yeah.
Which I mean, he runs with it, that style and purpose.
It's that's crazy. What translates when you're looking at some of these college backs, like the physicality. There's a ton of dudes that are fast as hell and they're able to outrun dudes at the collegiate level, but like you got to be able to run through guys at the next level, and that's his specialty,
especially right now. Like, we talk a lot about how the league is kind of going to, like, the passing type stuff. So you have, you know, Jim Harbaugh comes in and he wants to get big and strong and run guys over. Like, this is the kind of running back who can do that. Like, we'll talk about Chris Abrams-Drain, for example. Didn't really have a tackling problem in college. But being the size he is, when he runs into Audric Estime, you just don't think that things are going to go great for him. So with all these teams trying to get speedier on the back end, there might be even more tackles out there to be broken.
Well, it's the great... counter to all these nickel defenses is then running against the lighter box. This is the kind of back you want running against that lighter box. And then he needs to round out his game with his third down versatility, right? What can you do in pass pro? What can you do as a pass catcher to not be a clear tell once you are on the field?
I'm with you.
Yeah. Broken tackles, though, that's one thing that translates. Again, I think Justin said it, but you look at the stats, you know, PFF is something that they track some of that stuff throughout the year. That stuff translates, man. I think Javonte was up there when he was going through the process. What was that, 21, 22? Of course, the injury has, you know, hindered his NFL career, but he showed that as a rookie in the NFL, that Ravens run. Like, he's just going to run through defenses, and guys can't tackle him.
Yeah, and... you know, this is a weird one, but PFF, their analysts, they have this model that projects which running backs will succeed. And what they found is that there's three factors that really, really matter and predict success more than any other. One is just your spot on the consensus big board. So, like, who do you think is going to be the best?
Yeah.
So that one's obvious. The second is your age. With younger being better.
Yep.
Audric Estime, 20.64 on draft day. The only running back younger than him in the entire draft was Braylon Allen. Mm-hmm. And the third one, and this is the weird one, hand size. And maybe it's a fluke, but after like 20 years of data, that's it. Yeah. And he has the biggest hands in the class.
Ball security.
Yeah. Which is kind of like a strange thing, but he checks the box.
For a fifth round pick, kind of feels like he could be seeing the field early.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
RB1 by the end of the year.
He's got that ceiling.
Bye. I'm very hopeful that Javonte comes back and can regain his form, but that's asking a lot, especially with the way that he played.
Yeah, I mean, I love Javonte, but I think I'm more pessimistic on his long-term outlook than you guys are. I think Estime is easily RB1.
Yeah, I think by the end of the year he is too. I think there's two. First of all, the Broncos had 5 rushing touchdowns from the running backs last year. Short yardage game wasn't there. Like, they've got a down by the goal line, he's getting a lot of work. Third and short, he's getting a lot of work. But on top of that, they also didn't have many explosive runs. Their longest rushing touchdown was 5 yards all season. Like, the running game was just so bad, and the line seemed like it was doing so fine that he should be able to go in there and take that job.
I see only 4 fumbles for Estime in his career at Notre Dame.
Dude, they've got a backfield that has to be, like, historically speaking, some of the lowest fumbles in college football history.
Notre Dame?
No, Estime then combined with Bo Nix. Bo Nix has never fumbled it in his career.
That is crazy.
That is wild.
He's got big hands.
Big hands.
While I do this, while we take a little break, Haruski, before getting into the defensive guys, would you two look up Sean Payton backs in New Orleans who compare to Estime size-wise? Latavius Murray is the only guy that comes to mind.
Ingram's biggish.
Pierre Thomas, maybe?
Yeah, Ingram's biggish. Yeah. Yeah.
Pierre Thomas is there. Yeah.
Biggish are the returns you can get on Bet365. Forget biggish. Big. Tonight, abs in action. That's right. Oh, boy, baby. And we have a special Bet365 DMVR custom bet. That's right. We've boosted Cale Makar to get a point, not a power play point. Just a point, though I would suggest power play point as well, and the Avs to win. By the way, I wanted to wear another Avs hat today, one that would have the Yeti paw. Because I was thinking back to old Stars Avs matchups of yesteryear, Mike Modano versus Joe Sakic.
Yeah.
I wanted to think of that. Don't know where the fuck that hat is. Bet365 has you covered when you use code DMVR365 at signup. Send us a screenshot. Send us an email at promo@ddmvr.com where you can be eligible to win all sorts of free swag with us. Check that all out at ddmvr.com/bet365. And when you sign up, $10 deposit, $5 bet. As soon as that's settled, win, lose, or tie, $150 in bonus bets in your account to play with right there. Must be 21 plus, physically located in Colorado. Please gamble responsibly. You or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER.
Breckenridge Bourbon Whiskey is the official bourbon of the Denver Broncos. Look out for the 2024 Broncos Bourbon Blends to hit the shelves in August. The Breckenridge Distillery is the world's highest distillery, founded in 2008. They are most likely known for their blended bourbon whiskey, a high rye mash American-style whiskey. Our Breckenridge Bourbon is one of the most highly awarded craft bourbons in the U.S., I usually get one right around the beginning of every football season. It's nice and smooth.
Hell yeah.
It's a nice sipper. You can have it like with a barbecue. It's awesome. Breckenridge Distillery products are available in all 50 states. Shop your local retailer or just visit BreckenridgeDistillery.com for home delivery of our award-winning Breckenridge spirits. Après anywhere.
There he is.
Après. I can't say it.
It's all good. It took me like 3 weeks to learn it.
Any comps that come to mind?
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah.
Because we always think of Sean Payton as the Alvin Kamara back, right? He is not that.
No,
he is
no
bruiser downhill power back.
So I just went through it and looked at careers with the Saints from 2006 to 2022.
Great.
Ranking by fantasy points.
Yes.
Alvin Kamara, obviously different.
Yeah.
Mark Ingram, similar. Pierre Thomas, similar. Reggie Bush, different.
Yes.
Darren Sproles, different.
Yes.
But then the next 4, Deuce McAllister, 232.
Deuce McAllister was just coming to
Latavius
me.
Murray.
If he has Deuce McAllister's career.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Then it's Tim Hightower.
Yep. And he's another
6 foot, 226.
Hightower. That one would kind of fit.
Chris Ivory.
Chris Ivory is a big
223. And so it really is like you're either really big or you are really fast.
Kyrie Robinson was a big back too. CJ Spiller, another. Yep. He was more of a speed guy, obviously, but he was a big back. Going back to 2010 here, this team, you already mentioned Ivory and Pierre Thomas. They had Julius Jones, Liddell Betts. Those are big backs.
Yeah, for sure. I like that we did this. What's fun is the Broncos running back room might have a little of both already.
Well, and it's weird. There feels like there's nothing in the in-between. Right. You're either like 220 or you're like 438. Yeah, except for Kamara, who plays like it. But
Bush was probably the closest to like splitting the difference between the tackles. Could be used as a scat back.
Yeah, and the splitting the difference is that like he is a freak as a speed back, but was good enough to also do other things, you know?
And that's what they're lacking. I think it's why Jalen Wright was connected to the Broncos on a lot of places. Okay, switching to the defensive side. Mm-hmm. Justin, Jonah Ellis, one of your guys, the Utah pass rusher, him and Leetu Latu, the two most productive pass rushers in the Power Five. And what's funny is those scouting reports read very similarly, but this, Justin, was one of your guys. So give us the breakdown why you were so high on the Utah pass rusher coming into this class.
He's just relentless, and he's a guy that produced whenever he was. I mean, he had 78 tackles for loss over 30 games over the last 3 years, which is an insane amount of production.
How many tackles for a loss?
78 over 30 games.
No, that's not possible.
78 total tackles.
I was looking at the wrong. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
23
that
TFLs.
That makes much more sense.
23 TFLs.
And that's still a lot.
Still at the 30? Top.
Yep.
Yeah, it's 30 total games.
That's nuts. That's nuts. That's really
almost one per game. Yeah.
That's really impressive.
That's consistently getting into the backfield.
And this last season was just on fire. Could not be.
I mean, like, he obviously missed a couple games, but even so, still managed to have double-digit sacks. So I just, him and Mo Kamara to me were like the guys that weren't going to get quite as much attention in terms of like, are there upper traits on the same level as some of these people that are going to go in the first, you know, 45 picks? Probably not. But a guy that can just come and do it all for you. I mean, he's effective against the run. He's an effective pass rusher. I think he's craftier than he gets credit for in terms of like his moves and stuff. Mm-hmm. I love him. I maybe took him a little high in terms of like draft value, but I think the production is going to justify the pick when it's all said and done. So I couldn't have been more stoked other than when they drafted him. It was just that means Mo's not coming to Denver, but.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is a very high motor player. You mentioned his skill set. He's got a great spin, got a great swim move as well. I think you want to see that
good
bag.
Hands.
Yeah, really good active hands too. Yeah. I do think you want to see the bag fleshed out a little bit more in terms of his pass rush moves, but it's a great start for where he's at right now. I do worry a little bit about strength at the point of attack. I think he can get mauled over a bit in the run game.
Yep.
But otherwise, this is a good project to have at the edge. Had his best year in college so far this last year. Comes from NFL pedigree. His father, I think, is a D-line coach at Utah as well. So,
Former Bronco.
Yeah. So this is a great prospect and someone that I really liked a lot. And I didn't get to see him play Colorado this last year in the last game of the season. He was hurt. I don't know what the injury was exactly.
Labrum, I think.
So there you go. But he was their best defensive player, and Colorado had one of their best games into the back half of the year. Partly because he probably wasn't on the field.
Yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see what exactly they do with him. Because super productive as a pass rusher. Doesn't have the deepest bag, but the tools he's got are pretty sick. Comes at 6'2", 248. So he's kind of short.
Yeah. Bring up that tweet, would you?
But then the 248 is interesting because you look at that and say, like, okay, you're not like a big, powerful, edge-setting type of guy, but you look at the Broncos outside linebackers room, and it's Drew Sanders at about 233. It's Baron Browning and Nick Benito both at like 244 or something, so less than Jonah Ellis. And it's Jonathan Cooper at 259. So he might already be like their second biggest guy. He might not quite play like it yet, but being so young, just turned 21, you pack some weight on
him. That's another thing.
And then
super young.
Because he's so young and you still have time to put the weight on, does he actually wind up playing at 255? 260.
Well, and his dad played in the, what, 280s, 290s?
Also 6'5 instead of 6'2, but...
That's going to be the big thing. Now, he is long. His hands are 10 and a half inches. His arms are 33 inches.
And he uses them well. He gets leverage really, really well against bigger guys.
Yeah. And then, I mean, the three cone's one of the best in the entire class, so he can play really low. If you see him side by side with Letu Latu... Latu's 20 pounds heavier, but Ellis is, and a couple inches taller. Ellis, though, is the longer guy with bigger hand size who tested better, more explosive, and their production is right there. Their scouting reports are going to read very similarly. Where Ellis is two rounds weaker because he's a third rounder and not the first defender taken in the draft, 15th overall, is that 20 pound difference and the
3 inches or so in height too.
I think that matters less when you have the length on your side.
Okay.
I think what it's really going to come down to though is the power element, and it's not even in the run game. It's having that power element in the, as a pass rusher, because then if you have power on top of that burst, on top of that bend, on top of that developing arsenal of pass rush moves, that's really hard to deal with, man. And Todd was here on the set when they drafted. It took him two highlights to be like, oh, man, he's really going to be good as an inside rusher because he saw the active hands. He's one of those guys, right? The most direct route you give him to the quarterback, the better he's going to be.
Yep.
Even though he has that bend to go around, you still want him to. So I think he's one of those guys who could really benefit from putting on more weight. He's got the length. He doesn't have the height.
Yep.
How much his frame can sustain extra good weight, I think, is really going to be the difference between him being a good like third round pass rusher and a three down defensive end who can really be one of the NFL's better guys at the position.
And two more things on that comparison. Leiatu Latu more than 2 years older.
Yes.
So you have that huge head start.
Huge.
Just turned 21 a month ago. Crazy. A young 21.
2.5 years older. The three guys we've talked about that the Broncos drafted, super young.
Ellis and Latu, the only two Power 5 rushers with at least 12 sacks last year.
Yeah.
So they are like the two most productive.
I think Dallas Turner was like one of the few other guys with even double-digit sacks.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ellis did it in 10 games because he was hurt at the end of the
year. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And he doesn't get any against Bo because Bo was too elusive.
Yes. Now, Latu also probably played Bo, but...
No, they didn't, actually.
They didn't?
Nope.
Oh, no. I guess they didn't, did they?
They don't. I mean, you'd have to check a game log, but I don't believe that happened. Okay. Chris Abrams Drain. Second team All-American. Yeah. Some corner.
Yeah.
Converted wide receiver.
Mm.
Did you have something else on?
Oh, no. It was just Chris Abrams Drain. I was just going to say, I mean, the ball production obviously jumps off the charts. I mean, he's slender guy, but he runs well. He's aggressive. Obviously
part of that Missouri defense that was all world, right? In the SEC last year, one of the best defenses in the entire country.
Well, and sometimes, like, it's funny. I don't even know if this is going to make sense, but obviously you would like to have a corner with more length. Like, if you're just creating one in a lab, you would make him bigger and lengthier. I also kind of like the mentality of some of the smaller guys sometimes because it forces them to play differently. And He didn't shy away from the moment. Like, you're playing legit talent at receiver, obviously, with Missouri. And game after game, he's just out there making plays for him, keeping him in the mix. That Missouri defense was so much better than I expected coming in. And I think the secondary was a big part of that.
Definitely. Oh, converted receiver.
Him and Rakestraw, those two corners were huge. Converted wide receiver.
We like that.
Great game against Ladd McConkey. Probably even better game against Malik Nabers. Targeted twice in the end zone on Nabers. Knocks the ball out of his hands for crucial pass deflections. Competitive. Despite his size, I like how he tackles and comes up. Tackles well in space. And he's a converted wide receiver, right? I think he's like a former four-star recruit.
Yep.
His first year at Mizzou plays wide receiver. And since then has been working on the conversion. And so it's these small little things you can fix coaching-wise, right? Take better angles as a tackler, maybe sounder tackling, a little better technique on the footwork, not opening up your hips too early on cuts and stuff like that. Shit you can coach. Great coaches can coach this up.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question really is, where's that ceiling given mm-hmm. his size, right? For starters, I think he'll never be better than a good number two.
Right.
No, yeah.
He's not a lockdown number one.
He's just going to be limited to an extent mm-hmm. because of the size difference. But
you love the competitiveness, right? Like I talk about this a lot. We're always trying to find that profile of a corner who can play opposite PS2. Yeah. You want a guy who first and foremost is a dog, is going to accept the challenge, is going to be feisty, competitive, short memory, right? Because you're going to be targeted a ton. You're going to give up some to come back. And the natural hands are really intriguing.
But he has a lot of the mentality stuff that we liked about Terry and Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell and, you know, like the stars of the class. And again, those guys have significantly higher ceilings.
They're bigger. They're just
their frame and they're a little bit more explosive and all of that stuff. But in terms of the consistent production in a major league, like there's a lot to like watching this guy.
40 pass breakups over the last three seasons.
Incredible on ball production.
Which is crazy.
Incredible on ball production.
When you wonder how much of that comes from the receiver background and just like the instincts and like reading a guy. I mean, you know, like for like a guy like Travis Hunter, I got to imagine it benefits him when it's, oh, he's about to cut. Like you can 100%. Read him.
I mean, that's what makes Travis so good is his ability to understand both sides and understand what the other side is doing when he lines up on any given side. And it wouldn't surprise me if Chris Abrams-Drain has some of that. I mean, you kind of have to. I mean,
or Champ Bailey back in the day. Exactly. Again, we're not saying he's going to be Champ Bailey. No, but just having that background of being a receiver.
Absolutely. I mean, it shows up in the ball production. I mean,
closing speed's really unbelievable. I mean, really stands out when you watch his tape.
Yeah, athleticism, instincts, like he's got it all. Like this is just a natural football player. 4 picks, 13 passes defense this last year. That's the wide receiver coming through, man. He's going to play the ball like. He's not going to be one of those DBs who's just going to fight, you know, to get the PBU, you know, through someone's hands. He's going to go attack the football. That's his ball in the air. So I like it. Feisty player. Slightly undersized, but I don't know. This is kind of reminds me of Amik Robertson. Is that his name? The Raiders cornerback from like
La Tech. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Went way back for us.
This is like just a few years ago, but I mean, this was another guy who was like a day three pick, smaller, but had insane ball production.
Can he stay outside? That's the big question, right? I think coming into the
probably
season.
Probably matchup dependent, right?
Yeah, I mean. Total,
that's the thing, right?
Exactly. Like you're not going to put him on Devontae Adams.
Right.
But.
Hollywood Brown, though, I don't care. He's 165 pounds. Yeah, shit. Put him on Hollywood McConkey. Brown outside. Right. Right. Or Ladd McConkey. Yeah, there's a lot of smaller wide receivers.
And in the division, like he's actually.
Keenan Allen and Mike Williams have left, and they've been replaced by smaller guys. Rashee Rice, right? He gone. Mm-hmm. It's smaller, speedy guys.
Do you think in terms of what you guys saw from him as a tackler, it translates to the next level?
Oh, definitely. He's got the mindset to make it happen.
I agree.
Yep. Just like Jaquan. I think Jaquan makes it easier to believe that just because Jaquan also just such a small guy, but it doesn't really matter when you play that fast.
Yeah. 100%.
And if you don't, I mean, if you're willing to wrap a guy up and square up, which is what I saw, but again, just want to pick your brains on it.
Totally. That scheme was weird, right? It's a lot of deeper zones. Definitely. It's a lot of off coverage. He's never letting anyone get over the top. Sometimes it is like, geez, did we need that 15-yard cushion there?
But so many of those guys, when they play, and especially like at the collegiate level with some of the corners who maybe can run well or stay with guys, but they don't want to come up and make a tackle. Like they run up and they just kind of throw their shoulder at you. I didn't really see any of that from him, which was encouraging.
Right. And the slot versatility it's one of those things that a lot of people have said, I think mostly because of his size, but when you see him play on the boundary, it just looks like he's so comfortable there, almost like using the boundary as when somebody is so sharp and comfortable. Like, you just have the one-way break there. I would rather see, like, a Riley Moss probably go to the slot than Chris Abrams-Drain, even though Chris Abrams-Drain is, you know, that smaller, shiftier type of corner that you typically would try to move inside.
Right. Yeah, and as Justin said, I think there's some matchup versatility, right, with Moss and Chris Abrams-Drain. I do see Moss and Abrams-Drain with a bit of a leg up on Damari Mathis going into camp.
Yeah.
Also, his second year in college, this would be in 2021.
So his first year converting a corner.
Yep. Was also their kick returner. I think we'd expect Marvin Mims, especially if he gets an elevated role, maybe not as many kick returns.
It's great.
This could be your kick returner.
Yeah. Certainly some special teams versatility with this kid.
You know, yeah, anytime if you draft nothing a else, corner, he's going to be, you know, he can use him as a gunner or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. Watch him play. That. Like, he's got a gunner's mentality. He's going to fight all the way down the field.
Yes, he's that type of guy.
Do the rule changes make it so that you're a little more willing to have a premier guy back there? Just less kick collisions?
Yeah. Less collisions and just more returns. Yeah. Like, more potential to break one. I think early on, you probably see it even more. Because, like, if you're the Broncos with Mike Westhoff, who was the first ever full-time special teams coordinator in NFL history, like, that guy's just come up with so many schemes and things that so many teams have picked up on. Like, if you're the Broncos, you go into this saying, we are going to come up with a better plan for this than anybody else. And so let's make sure we get somebody great back there to take advantage of it. Because you're going to think you're gaining leverage here while the rest of the league kind of figures things out. Because everybody's learning from each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be super. That's such a fun, interesting caveat. And again, picks like Xavier Worthy. Like, Troy Franklin. Could he be an added? You know, there's a lot to unpack there.
Let me ask you guys this. In terms of just 2024 impact, we're not talking multiple years, just year one. Out of Jonah Ellis or Abram Strain, who makes the more consistent impact? Because there might be more reps in the secondary to give out.
That's what I'm thinking. And I think, I think it's harder to make the jump from college to pros in the trenches, though. Like, we saw Nick Benito. It took him a few years for him to figure it out. There's only a handful of those guys, those premier guys, Will Anderson, who come in there, you know.
Just going to hit the ground running.
Right. Yeah. So I'd bet more so on Chris Abrams-Drain than Ellis.
I think Chris Abrams-Drain is definitely the more boomer bust pick, but I think I go that way too. Just because there's a chance he wins this job. Like, it's him, it's Riley, or it's Damari Mathis.
There's a chance.
And
I agree.
If he wins it, then he's a never down player. And if he loses it, but just like last year, 4 weeks in, you're like, this isn't going good, he could be next up. There's also a world in which, you know, Jaquan struggles. We'd love Jaquan. He did a whole bunch of great things. If he struggles early on, well, then Riley Moss is going to the slot. So there you go. The job is open. So it's definitely the boomer bust pick because Jonah Ellis is going to be a part of the rotation, you would think. But I just think he's so deep in the rotation, I'd rather gamble on Abrams Drain for this.
If I set Jonah's line over under 4.5 sacks in the year,
I'd have to take the
if
under.
If you set like over under Ellis tackles for a loss or Chris Abrams Drain
PDUs,
I'm taking Ellis TFLs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll go out on a limb and say Ellis gets 6 sacks this season.
Oh, wow. Book it. Okay.
I mean, he's got a bag, man. Like, this isn't like a raw edge that you're going to, like, compared to Nick Benito, right? Where it's like coming in, like, you could see the athleticism, you could see the bend.
Yeah.
But you saw that the body needed to be worked on. He needed to bulk up a bit. He needed to figure out how to play the position more so. Whereas this guy has the lineage. He's shown it. He took that jump, this 22 to 23 in terms of production. Like,
yeah.
So,
yeah, I'd go the other way. Because last year, Broncos, 8.5 sacks for Jonathan Cooper, 8 for Benito. But before that, they haven't had like real production in quite a while. Mm-hmm. And so, like, year before, leader was Draymond Jones, 6.5. Bradley Chubb was second, 5.5. Baron Bryant, 5. So, like, they're in that range. I think 4.5 for Ellis, I'd take the under.
Well, as Jose points out in the Toyota chat, contract year for a couple of the other guys.
Definitely.
Which, you know, that could be a factor, too, in terms of just, if Ellis pops, we're going to get this guy in the field and we have incentive to move on from one of these other guys.
Definitely.
I'll give you a crazy Ellis comp. Randy Gregory. Wiry, longer, young length, edge rusher who in his NFL career found ways to add bulk and be a guy who could sustain being a run defender and having more power to his game. Even though it was always like, man, this guy's like 6'6", 240 at Nebraska. Like, is he going to add weight? Somehow, some way, figured it out. Mm-hmm. And he became more of a complete pass rusher that way. Undrafted free agents?
Let's do it.
Let's hit it.
I've got two big standouts. Two guys I'm really excited about. But you can start us off, Henry. I know you're really excited.
Yeah. Are we throwing 7th rounders in here too?
Yep.
Okay, we should probably hit these guys.
If there are 7th rounders worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Devon Bailey is interesting.
Definitely. He is interesting. Big slot, old slot. He's already 26. Yeah. 3 years on a mission right after high school because he didn't like his options for scholarships.
Yes.
Walked on at Utah. Led him in receiving. Like, I think that's the part where...
Last year?
Yeah, you always have to remember... the last
2 years.
I think it might be last two. Yeah. But
No, maybe Kincaid 2 years ago, but...
That could be. But under 600 yards this year was still enough because that Utah offense just wasn't good.
Yeah,
so he's they had quarterback issues.
With Cam Rising, they were a different attack for sure.
Exactly. So he's, I think, held back the offense a little bit. I think there's definitely traits you like. At the very least, he's a good special teamer. Mm-hmm. But definitely some Tim Patrick mold. Like, he ran well.
If you like Johnny Wilson in this class, like Vele.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Kind of fun.
But that same offense, our guy Thomas Yasmin.
Yes, the Australian rugby player. Yes.
Oh, my goodness. There's just some crazy numbers. And the thing is, the numbers aren't
him
like...
Him and my guy Brent Cuthy, a lot of preseason tight end award lists.
Yep.
And like that whole Utah offense kind of fell flat on their face. Mm-hmm. Yasmin dealt with a lot of injuries. But the year prior, what got him on all those lists?
Yeah, so the year prior... 13 catches, doesn't blow you away. 301 yards, solid 23 per catch on those 13 catches.
Right, which for a tight end is noteworthy.
On those 13 catches, six of them went for touchdowns.
Which final is six ridiculous. Weeks, right? He has a touchdown in each game.
Yeah, no, it was pretty crazy. And he just breaks so many tackles, just over and over and over. And it's that rugby background. Comes in at 6'4", 245. 6'4 and 6'8", I should say. So basically 6'5", 245. 23 already, so like kind of older. You see why he slipped, like not a whole bunch of production.
Yeah. Rar, right?
He's definitely, playing, definitely.
He's their second tight end at best. Dalton Kincaid's there in his breakout season as a junior, I guess.
But just the playmaking ability. You get the ball in his hands.
It's really intriguing.
It's just so easy to see, like, in this offense the Broncos are going to run. You know, I've talked about this over and over, but you run that slot fade with the little out route right behind it. Yasmin will catch that, break a tackle, and turn that five-yard gain into 15 yards.
Yeah, and also the history at the position of how guys kind of come out of nowhere and develop into, I mean, some of the best tight ends in league history have come out of there. Only healthy for three games last year.
Yep.
The only game I got to watch was the Oregon State game, and he's playing as more of an inline tight end, getting more blocking assignments, being the starting full-time tight end, has three catches, 59 yards, a 41-yard touchdown in that one as well. And there I could see kind of the development from the year prior where he's more of just a second tight end, nice yak weapon, to a guy who was starting to develop as a more well-rounded tight end, who was starting to show better blocking, especially in pass pro, as an inline tight end. And so the upside for this kid is pretty high. And he comes from this rugby background, very feisty, very, very intriguing prospect that the Broncos drafted.
I think he just needs more reps.
Yeah.
Like, he's a guy that just needs to play more football.
I do too. Then the other guy I'm really excited about, always on the offensive skill positions, would be Blake Watson, ESPN's top undrafted offensive player. 5'9", 195, scat back, out of Memphis. Insane combine testing, really intriguing numbers, caught 90 passes for 794 yards and five touchdowns the past two seasons.
He's going to be our Darren Sproles.
I like that. Jaleel McLaughlin, I think, like, you know, you've been put on notice a little bit.
Oh,
now you have two Alvin Kamaras with this other running back room of all these power backs. And I really like this kid. I really like this former Dominion transfer, I believe.
Yep.
He had some really good games. He has some promising qualities to him.
And 90 receptions the last 2 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just mean, like fit-wise with what you have, this is what you needed. So to be able to get him as a UDFA, also bringing in Estime, like, I just really like what they did there in terms of a 1-2 punch in the... Yep.
100%.
Have a little bit of versatility within your offense.
100%. And I mean, many people, had they drafted him in the fifth round, no one would have blinked an eye.
Yeah, definitely. Right,
for sure.
He will be 25 in October.
Yep.
Older rookie.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, this is definitely competition for Jaleel. And if they both perform well, there is room for both. If you want to save some money, cut Samaje. You probably need like Audric Estime to show up and look like he's ready to do something.
Or Javonte.
Or Javonte, honestly, yeah.
That history as a receiving back, I almost wonder, could he spend part of his time in the receiver room?
Could he?
Could I this mean, be
you
a
could do some put him in the slot and do some tape
player. Look, man, we've been talking about this for 4 or 5 years about how this backfield and this team just needs to get more dynamic. Like,
yep.
Not it's not about gathering wide receivers or running backs. You just need more guys who can do both. And this is a guy who can do both.
100% True. And 195, but I think he runs harder than that.
Definitely.
He looks, he looks bigger than that on the field.
I think he changes angles on defenders well. Yeah. Like, nobody's like hitting him straight. It's just like you can dip your shoulder and he'll just roll right off.
And a bit more power running to his game than you'd think, right?
Definitely.
I'm very, very intrigued by him.
Yeah.
He's ESPN's 11th ranked back. That's really interesting. I think those come straight from Kuiper.
Jordan Reed? Oh, Kuiper.
I think so.
Who stands out to you, Jake?
I mean, Blake Watson, but I'll let you riff on the Mountain West guys. Just something I've noticed just from going through this whole undrafted free agent class, and it's something that really resonates with this whole draft class, is a lot of older, productive players.
Production seemed to be a point of emphasis.
Yeah, man. Like,
we still got the Raz guys, but now we want some college production as well. That's the Sean Payton add-on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Alec Mock, the Air Force guy, I think he's a five-year player. Blake Watson, you just mentioned, 25-year-old. Right. Thomas Yasmin, an older player. Jordan Miller, the SMU kid, he's coming from Miami. He already played 4 years at Miami. He used his grad transfer year at SMU, so he's an older player. The UTSA kid's an older player. Lincoln Victor, the wide receiver, played a long time at Hawaii, too.
We've talked he's about an older Lincoln player. Victor, the Washington State.
The Fresno State linebacker, Lavelle Bailey, he's an older player. Yep. 5 years in the Mountain West as well. So.
Yep.
No, the Mountain West guys, they brought in, played a ton of football. Frank Crum.
One of the best testing offensive tackles in the entire combine. Yep. Huge guy, too.
He will be on the roster week one.
Ooh.
Nice.
I would agree. I mean, gun to my head, you tell me, is the center from South Carolina or Frank Crum on the 53 week one? I'd probably go Crum.
Yeah. I mean, it's both are just such muddy competitions that it's...
Yeah.
Like, you got Forsyth, Wattenberg, Mustafa competing for the center job. You draft a center. It's like, there is maybe a little guard... There's definitely guard versatility, but you also have, like, you brought in Calvin Throckmorton, too. Right. But then even on the outside, like, our guy Alex Palshevsky, he's still there. Yep. Bring in Matt Parrott. He's there. Quinn Bailey's
still there.
He's there. Yeah. He was, like, their sixth lineman. So, like, both those competitions, they're just going to be crazy.
What I love about Crum, the athleticism and size, to me, make him such a perfect, you know, sixth offensive lineman in jumbo. He's a perfect swing tackle. But for, like, you go jumbo, this is the guy you line up as a tight end. And he's actually, like, a 4'9 athlete, but he's 6'8", 300 pounds, you know? Like,
with almost 34-inch arms. Like, he
that's
just,
who you want.
He moves well. He uses his hands great. I mean,
we see a red zone target to this guy within his first 3 years
go,
in the league. Mark it down.
If you're listening to this, and I'm obviously a Mountain West guy. I mean, he plays for our biggest rival, so I wouldn't be hyping him up just out of the kindness of my heart.
No, he would not.
Go not watch how the Wyoming O-line held up against Texas. Go watch how Frank Crum held up against Mohamed Kamara. Like, he's single-handedly allowed Wyoming's offense to stay on path, and, like, it was so frustrating because so many times, like, Mo, he'd almost be there, and he'd give Peasley just enough time to get it off, and dude played a ton of football over the last 4 years.
49 starts in his college career.
He's a stud.
I mean, frankly, a bit of a shocker. This guy wasn't drafted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was the most surprising out of all the Mountain West guys that didn't get drafted.
Damn.
Holker was a little surprising to me, too, but Crum was by far the biggest surprise. And honestly,
I'd agree.
I don't think Lavelle Bailey is going to make the team, to be honest. Maybe he's a practice squad guy. I just don't know if he moves well enough. I don't know if the instincts are quite there, but has a ton of production at middle linebacker. He was a guy that made plays in big games. Going back to those Jake Haener years, Lavelle Bailey had like two or three game ceiling interceptions and in big moments. You like that he's a guy really that uses space well. If anything, I would say that's what I like the most about him, is some of the instincts and pass coverage and just kind of dropping back in the middle there. But Crum is...
Yeah.
I'm glad that I can root for him now, and I no longer have to play against him for my alma mater.
Lavelle Bailey is like your Cody Barton replacement. Probably after this season.
Okay.
I think you bring him practice squad, let him hang around for a year.
With a small chance that he could beat him out in camp. A very, 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 very small chance. But for a roster spot, and in that world, Jonas Griffith's probably a starter. Like, he's so small that it's just tough to say he's going to be a guy. But
last year, how many did they sign? Four UDFAs? Adkins, Jaleel, and I swear I saw four.
He was IR, but he did make the 53.
Let's just say four for argument's sake. Over under this year. I feel really good about three. I don't know that I find a fourth, though.
I was going to. I can find a path for Watson, Crum. I think Crum would be my biggest guy I would put my money on. I'd take under. Crum, I think Watson, it's two, or, I think it's two or three.
The two guys who got a quarter million.
And that's, again, that tells you a lot about how the franchise views you.
And it's crazy, though. Crum is 6'8 and a quarter. No, so not even just like 6'8. It's massive. Like 6'8 plus. 313, so not like crazy for like being 6'8, but he's filled out.
And he's light on his feet. Yeah. Like the dude.
169, 10 yard split.
6 year senior, you don't love necessarily, but 5 year starter. Like, well, if you're going to be there, play.
If your athletic ceiling's that, it's kind of like, okay.
Exactly.
Well, he's a guy, he grew a lot over the years. Like,
yeah, it makes sense.
He's not an NFL prospect 2.5 years ago.
He wasn't even.
And look,
he got his first All Mountain West this year. Wasn't even honorable mention before.
Right. And starting at left tackle, which you like, but I do describe a lot of like, oh, so and so kind of a sloppy offensive lineman, so and so a little more put together, so unsloppy. He's more on the sloppy side.
Yeah, he's got to be refined, and it's why.
Bro, you're 6'8". Like, you can't, like, 6'8's going to look sloppy. That's just how it is. Yeah. Like,
well, Mike McGlinchey.
Yeah, you're too long-limbed to not look sloppy. Yes. Like, that's part of the deal.
You're not necessarily, like, even the guys you're going up against, like, he's so much bigger than them. It almost would have helped his techniques against some bigger guys, so he wouldn't have to, like, do all the work.
Yeah, definitely.
What was the power scheme, though?
What was that 10-yard split again?
169. And I think he also had the best 40 of any O-lineman.
Oh, for Crum, I have 168.
Okay. 494, 40, 169, 10-yard split, 31.5-inch vertical, 9.6 broad jump, 7.3, 9.3 cone, 4.73, 20-yard shuttle, and 22 reps on the bench.
What was his arm length?
It's arm just under 34 inches, 33 inches and 7/8.
Roger Rosengarten was 4.92. So Crum was second in the 40.
Crazy.
Which, obviously crazy. Incredible.
10.5-inch hands.
The 168 10-yard split was first.
Yeah. That's great. At 6'8".
Hit me
nuts, man.
Yeah. Knife to your guys' back. Who's your UDFA that makes the roster? Get some final thoughts and get out of here.
I mean, running back always feels so safe.
Yep.
Like, just because it's so, like, running back.
Linebackers, too, though.
Gun to my head, I say Samaje's off the roster and Blake Watson makes it.
Ooh, I love it.
With a gun to your head, too.
That's probably highest on Yasmin, who also Australian. He takes an international slot, right? Which is nice. Yeah.
But that's only if you're a practice squad.
And that, I think he's more of a stash for next year.
I think so, too.
I think he's needs some development right after. Like, I was really high on Inkoom last year. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Mm-hmm. But the difference is you've got two tight ends on the roster. He'd say, like, these are definitely NFL tight ends. Like, Nate Adkins, I really like. You could cut him. Lucas Kroll, a lot of people like. You could cut him. One of those
and
two.
And he's the guy I feel best about the upside to be in. True inline tight
end. Me too. Out of anybody in that room. On top of that, so you have two that you think make the roster. They also changed the IR rules, so you can take a guy off of IR if you put him on during camp. So if Greg Dulcich is hurt, which, again, 40% chance that's the case, well, knock on wood, but we've seen what we've seen, you might be down to, like, one real certain tight end. So the door is just so wide open there.
It's true. All right. We've got Rams Pod coming up next. This was awesome. Thank you, fellas. Thank you, Yaya. Thank you to Breck Brew, Raising Cane's, all our great sponsors, Bet365, Toyota. We'll be back next week. More draft talk for you. Until then, bye.